I'm Robin Upton, and I used to make a radio show called Unwelcome Guests. That's available on unwelcomeguests.net.
I saw that actually at Radio 4 All. So some weeks we'll be seeing it just underneath us or just above us on Radio 4 All. So what was Unwelcome Guests?
Unwelcome Guests was started in 2000 by Lynn Gerry, who was a Pacifica producer, and we may or may not know the details of what happened to Pacifica. Lynn Gerry decided to make a website for independent radio producers to upload content to, and that's why you're on Radio 4 All. Lynn Gerry stopped making Unwelcome Guests, and I really missed it because I used to listen to it every week, and that was in 2010. I was living in Korea at the time, and I thought, Robin, you haven't got much of a busy schedule. You could probably pick up those reins if push came to shove, and that's what I decided to do.
So what was Pacifica and what happened?
It was a radio channel, and it put the truth out as those people saw it. And
based in the US?
Yep, US channel, and it hit corporate control of media, and other people decided, I'd rather we thought what will be on the airwaves, a new lot. And I think it's still running. And it was, long story short, there was some kind of purge. Yeah. And it's now been effectively neutered, like a lot of sort of opposition voices. They're opposition up to a point. Yeah. But Lynn Gerry decided she was ex-Pacifica. I think she made the first website where people could upload audio for free and download it for free, and that is radioforall.net. That's why you're there, that's what I found, and that is still running now. It's been running 20 plus years. There can't be many websites that could claim that.
Oh, that's right. So what about WikiSpooks? Because that's another sort of thing. Or maybe you could, before we talk about that, why did you call it Unwelcome Guests?
I didn't call it Unwelcome Guest. That's Lynn Gerry. And I think the answer was basically because I asked her when I was taking the handover. It's like, people are going to ask me this. What's the Unwelcome Guest thing? So is it that the guests we have on this radio show, they're going to be unwelcome on corporate media because they're actually speaking from the heart? They're not following some agenda. Hard to know. You have to track down Lynn and ask her for the definitive answer. But anyway, when I was researching Unwelcome Guests, I'm looking for information on a topic that isn't a corporate press release, that actually is based on empirical evidence. I was looking for that, and I came across this wiki. I thought, what's this? Wiki Spooks. Don't know what a spook is, but I liked the website, and it was run by a British guy, and I thought, I could actually help this guy. I've got some relevant skills. And that was about 2012, I think.
Okay. Well, Wikipedia is what everyone knows about, WikiLeaks based its name on this idea of the wiki. So what's the difference between Wikipedia and WikiSpooks?
Well, that's a good question, because superficially they do look very similar. They both look like encyclopedias. I'm sure you're familiar with Wikipedia presentation. The difference is in the content. So you might not know, for example, that Wikipedia, as an encyclopedia, it's trying to be the definitive word on whatever the topic is. So interesting then that they do not welcome primary sources. The original documents about whatever it is that they're reporting, they don't want them. I found that was fascinating.
It's bizarre because, say, for example, conspiracy theories, as we know, was a term invented by the Central Intelligence Agency after the Kennedy assassination in order to put down people who were on the trail of the real killers of JFK. And that is a specific document. You would have thought that would be quite interesting if you wanted to have an encyclopedia page about conspiracy theories.
Well, absolutely. If you're going to do scientific inquiry, you're going to have to look at some evidence, and you're going to make some observations on that evidence. You're not going to be learning definitively if you're reading something somebody else wrote, because they make mistakes. Is it true? Is it well intended? But no, that document about the fact that conspiracy theory would be a good phrase to repeat and try to vilify, that's on WikiSpooks. We've got a lot of documents, primary sources, the official documents. You know, you can argue, you know, was it a fake? Was it a real? But it's like, well, if you can't even read the document, well, then how much can you learn? But Wikipedia says, no, we don't want primary documents. We want what corporate media says about it, which is...
If
you control corporate media, then whatever is in the evidence is irrelevant, because you say whatever it is about it, and you can cite that in Wikipedia.
Yeah. So, what is a spook? Just someone that works for MI6, MI5...
Well, I didn't name the website WikiSpooks. I don't know exactly what was in the mind of Peter when he came up with it. But, yeah, we use spook to mean a person who is on a paid list of people, you know, MI5, CIA, whatever. There's lots of these. Pretty much every country seems to have one or two of these agencies, and we don't know very much about what they do.
So most of them, they seem to have an internal agency, like here in Britain, MI5, yeah. Which is works closely with Special Branch of the police and is overseen by the Home Office. And then you've got MI6, which is Foreign Office for, it's just James Bond's flying around the world, bumping off Britain's enemies.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a common pattern, that you have one for sort of inside the country and one for outside the country. And there are often different legal limitations, so you could maybe spy on somebody's email, but not the email. But we don't actually know whether those actually mean anything. Do they even get followed?
The point is, how do you know if they're breaking the law or if they're even breaking their own rules? So what about the role of these agencies? I think we need to focus a bit on Britain. What's the role of them?
Well, it's a good question. And, I mean, to look at the origins of these agencies, yes, as you suggested, there is a story that these agencies may have made mistakes in the past, they've been a bit undisciplined, but they are gradually getting brought back into the fold
by the democratic machine.
There's no may about it. I mean, MI6 and the CIA and other related agencies just manufactured evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It was put out all across the press as an excuse, a pretext to start an illegal war. So there's no mistaking that, really.
Well, I think I tend to agree, Tony. So as far as the UK is concerned, didn't they pass a law during COVID that says there's a whole bunch of agencies, including MI5, that if they commit crimes, they're not crimes?
Yeah, including the Environment Agency, all sorts.
Yeah, so, I mean, that is an actual black and white testimony that there is a thing called the law which is going to hit you, but it isn't going to hit the members of this organisation. So I wonder why they need to get exempted from ordinary laws.
I remember years and years ago, I was living in Oxford and seeing momentarily this logo for MI5, which had it was a triangle, and the bottom left was M, the top was an I, and a V for 5 in the bottom right hand corner. But underneath the letter I at the top was an actual eyeball, a little eye at the top of the pyramid. Now this, to me, looks like occultism of some sort, you know, the eye of Horus or something.
Well, yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, if you were to become a Mason, you would learn some things about the organisation. You wouldn't necessarily know who set it up or what were the real purposes, and if you became a level 2 Mason, you might advance. What do we know about MI5? We've seen films about a guy called James Bond. So they don't actually do very much in terms of actual reporting of data or inviting people to come and have a look.
No, in fact, it's almost like an ad.
I tend to think that the James Bond character has probably been nurtured by people who had an interest. It's a wonderful thing to believe. If you happen to be a spook, you can identify with MI5. You can feel good about seducing people and blowing other people up and doing all of that.
I'm very sympathetic, actually, to Ian Fleming, who was in naval intelligence during World War II. I think he, after the Second World War, he'd hit the bottle. He was actually an alcoholic. And he'd been advised by somebody, possibly Dennis Wheatley, somebody else, saying, look, you can't write about any of this stuff, but you can write it in fiction. They can't touch you.
Yeah, I think there was a need, a kind of catharsis.
He needed to get it off his chest, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and fiction was a helpful label. We've had, I'm trying to think of the name of that female American whistleblower who wrote a roman à clé about what she knew.
Was this Susan Lindauer, maybe? Somebody
no,
like her?
No, not Susan Lindauer, but very close. I think it might have been. It might have been. No, it wasn't Susan Lindauer, but it was somebody.
Sybil Edmonds?
Sybil Edmonds, yes. Yes, she wrote The Lone Gladiator. That was a roman à clé. So there are, as human beings, we are storytellers. We need to witness to what we have seen. And some of those quite horrifying things that went on, decades later, people need to somehow get that out of their system.
Yeah, the journalists nowadays seem to be story killers.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the individuals who've shaped this world. I was, you know, sorry, I've gone off on a tangent here, Tony, but you've just tipped me off, because I was thinking about J. Edgar Hoover was actually the first example. Wasn't he FBI director for about 40, 42 years? And his deputy was his homosexual partner. It's like, here's the question. Is the 20th century the eclipse period for the influence of the individual as opposed to the organisation? I mean, Hoover very much shaped the FBI. If you're a wannabe Hoover and you now join it, 21st century, have we reached a point where these organisations, these alphabet soup, have such a heavy agenda, so much control, that you're unlikely to have much influence?
Well, I'm chatting to you on the day that the British have launched the first Storm Shadow missiles into Russia. It's the first time Britain has attacked Russia with serious weaponry since the Crimean War. We've obviously got the Anglo-Zionist Empire sort of is in a bit of an interregnum in a way before Trump actually takes over. Now he's been elected. And it's almost as if the permanent government have kind of got a few weeks or maybe a couple of months to do what they want before suddenly they've got a new emperor.
Well, yeah, that's a fascinating thought. If it's true, are you going to predict we're going to see more exciting things until January the 6th?
Well, maybe. And the thing is, if they think that he's not going to be sympathetic to the deep state, I mean, he has actually said he wants to obliterate the deep state. I mean, that's not the most friendly way of putting it, but
he's cheap, Tony.
Well, okay, so
it's easy to say you're going to obliterate. I seem to remember something about draining a swamp. I don't know.
But he's now got his second bite of the cherry, Trump, and also they've really been going for him through the courts over the last few years. So I think this time he's saying, right, well, first time, you know, he's getting his second bite of the cherry. He might actually do something. But the point really here is, what I'm trying to say is, we've got the United States, we've got Britain, and we've got Israel, all causing absolutely masses of trouble. In fact, at the vanguard of World War III. So what's the power dynamic between those three countries, given that Britain has created both the United States and more recently Israel?
Well, that's an interesting question. I take you back to the 1979 JCIT, the Jerusalem Conference on International Terrorism. So there's about 600 people there. It was held in Jerusalem. It was Netanyahu who called it. I think George H.W. Bush was probably there. Basically, this is 1979. So these guys are asking the question, what are we going to do if we lose the designated enemy? If communism fails to inspire terror and all people reaching for the Cold War? Answer, we can have a new war on terrorists. Of course, that's exactly what happened. So that's why this particular conference, this angle, is a good place to start with as far as power dynamic goes. Like, well, Cold War doesn't cut much ice. I mean, you and I, we went to school in the 70s. We knew we were fighting for the right. That was a narrative that was quite effective and quite well deployed.
Well, you know what I think? For those years, we loved our music. We loved our films. There was actually quite a good, should we say, a lot of good satire around. We felt that we were living in the 70s in a very self-critical culture, which was completely like the opposite to what the Soviet Union was.
Yeah, I think we did. I mean, I think we wanted to. It's an easy sell. You are the good guys. But, yes, there was... I think there was... I mean, I, Possibly this is just two old men over beers thinking back to the music that used to be good. And you know, the Bible talks about, don't talk about how good it was in the old days, because there's always been people like that. But I do, no, I do, I tend to agree with you, actually, Tony, that I think in terms of independent, individual, personal, genuine, authentic thought, there was more going on then than there is now.
So, okay, like, so God Save the Queen, the fascist regime, then we also had the Python, which was extremely anti-authoritarian, and it was just poking fun at every authority figure, really, which I think is very healthy. It's much of it's gone now. But anyway, look,
you'll fix it. That's another angle.
God, look, okay, so let's just, yeah.
Was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
No, so there was much more freedom of, and I think what they were doing basically was just making TV worth watching in order to get everyone to have one in there.
Yeah, that's definitely a way to look at it. It's like, well, they've got a huge amount of recorded TV they've made. I wonder whether there's any data on which particular things get repeated from 50 years ago. They could pick anything. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we looked at the big data and they were very much focused on one particular angle, you know, whether that's westerns or movies, I don't know. But yes, it's certainly a vehicle for social control. You and I, we were oblivious to this fact in the 70s, but we did sense there was some genuineness there.
Yeah, the genuineness was there to distract from things like the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War.
Yeah, the genuineness is a sugar around the pill. That's what the whole concept is.
But anyway, so we're talking about a period which is when we had the resignation of Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands from the chairmanship of Bilderberg, which had been chugging along quietly for 20 years or so into the mid-70s. You and I both share an interest in that. I put up the first website, I think, which was dedicated to just simply publishing the press releases, which I'd managed to nab off of the Reuters article database back in, I think it was 1996. And you've done a lot with it too. What do you make of the Bilderberg, and what attracted you and what made you take to them?
Well, heads up to you, Tony, for being the first person who brought the word Bilderberg across my desk. This is about 2003. There's a short video of you in front of the Clifton Suspension Bridge. I'm thinking, okay, so he seems pretty confident. How much do I believe this guy? And I didn't know until I checked it out. It's like, well, yes, they do have this conference, and there's no denying it. And there didn't used to be much of a public... They now have a website. I think that is basically a response to people like you and me who've been putting up so many websites. The whole, oh yeah, let's just keep it all under the radar thing really wasn't going to fly. It's like, we should be out there telling our version of the story, because otherwise anybody who writes about this is going to pick up information from people we'd rather they didn't pick up information from.
Okay, so, I mean, I can say a similar thing about how I first came across it, which was at Wandsworth, the Guinness protest site in 1996. A chap called, what was his name? I think it was Paranoid George. That was his nickname, but he was actually a violinist and a conductor, and he was part of something called the Christian Council for Monetary Justice. And he just came up, I scribbled it down in my notebook and looked it up. So I didn't really know what it was. I thought, let's
but
just
you're a
see.
BBC journalist, and you had access to
not
a
at the time.
It up.
No, not at the time. No, I'd finished the BBC 93, and I was working with George Monbiot at the time with the Land Is Ours campaign. But the point is, what is it about it that you find it? I can share with you what I find it in a minute.
Well, I was on board with Wiki Spooks as a concept. Let's actually document what was said. Let's put primary documents there. Let's not give a priority to corporate media. It's like, okay, well, Bilderberg is something. It's a set of annual meetings since 1954. So up to now, we've got slightly more than 3,000 visitors. So what kind of people are these Bilderbergers? If we got 3,000 of them, how many of them do you think were under 16? Answer, none at all. But how many of them were under 40, for example? Answer, not very many, but some. So that's interesting. If you're 20 and you get invited to the Bilderberg, has that happened? I think it has. I think if you look up Boyan Slat, you'll find him, but I digress. So the point is, you're talking to somebody who got a PhD, so I know about dotting I's and crossing T's.
In what?
In statistics.
Right.
But here I found a very interesting set of meetings. We've got royalty, we've got company directors, we've got people who are normally in the public eye, all meeting together somewhere for a couple of days. And is that in the public eye? Oh no, that doesn't get reported on. Well,
funny, because you've got the media bosses in there too, the bigger media empire.
Yeah, if they wanted it reported, for sure it's going to get reported. So why not? Answer, oh, they like their privacy and they just want to chat and play golf. Well, I'm sure some of them are on that wavelength. That
I mean, I'm looking at it now as basically the executive management committee for the Fourth Reich, really. It was started by an ex-SS officer for the first 20 years. They are very much into corporate power, globalism, and cementing the West. The main object seems to be, other than the policy, seems to be to make sure they get their people into the top positions as prime ministers, presidents, managing the NATO countries. It's very much wedded to NATO.
Yeah, he's certainly wedded to NATO and transnationalism. And wouldn't it be easy if all the governments of the world were somehow linked into a hierarchy? Because then we could have the guy at the top, and that'd be just so much easier than having to pretend to have a whole bunch of different people with fake arguments.
Yeah.
So yeah, they've certainly. I mean, I run this website WikiSpooks, and it's like Wikipedia, but we have a very focus on the deep state and what's hidden. And it's hard to know if somebody wants to join and says, hello, this is me, this is who I am, can I join your website? It's a difficult job to spot, and occasionally we say, no, you have just been planting one dodgy story after another without proper sourcing, and you're not willing to admit. And then we occasionally have kicked out a few people from the site. But as far as Bilderberg goes, everybody and their dog agrees, if you look, this group does actually exist, it does actually happen, it's got a website now, it makes annual reports. So we've had 3,000 people in it, and what I didn't until about 5 years ago note it, well, no, I said five, I said seven. About 7 years ago, I noticed all the reports of all the Bilderberg meetings are on the internet. They're there as PDFs, because somebody had them in his file and he died, and it randomly got posted to somebody's art. They're all there, and nobody, I've never heard anybody say that's a fake report. So we've got a whole bunch of very seminal documents. And are they on Wikipedia? Well, no, Wikipedia doesn't do primary documents. It doesn't want the evidence. It wants what corporate media said about Bilderberg. And it has said things about Bilderberg, but it's very intermittent and it doesn't paint a full picture.
Yeah, before the sort of 1990s, when I did my Bilderberg website and got the Bilderberg domain name, there were actually some journalists who had come across it and thought off their own bat, basically, let's just go and they did exposés of various sorts. I think the guy's name's Robert Eringer. Yeah. He wrote a book as well as a couple of articles for mainstream press. Yeah. There was also C. Gordon Tether at the Financial Times. He was absolutely adamant, as one of their most popular columnists, that he was going to write an article about the Bilderbergers, and it was pulled at the last minute, spiked by the editors, and eventually he was sacked. So there have been journalists out there. I mean, it's very unfortunate. I shouldn't be blaming journalists, really, because actually it's editors and managers of the news media that have kept this out of the public eye. But do you want to just, what is it? For someone that's never come across it, how would you describe Bilderberg?
Bilderberg is an annual meeting. There's about 100 to 120 people there. These are likely to be rich people. They're likely to be directors of companies. They're likely to be holders of jobs. They might be head of national governments. Perhaps they'd just be ministers. So what you could colloquially refer to as important people. So why would 120 important people meet every year for 60 plus years? And why are we talking about it? Well, how does that relate to our everyday lives? Now, this is where I have some quite special testimony, Tony, because I'm going to report on something that I don't think anybody else has reported on. I made this website. I didn't make the website. Peter made the website. I decided, because all these reports are available, let's just type them all in. It was a long job, and you know, I'm anal retentive. I got the kind of librarian streak, so It boiled down to 3,000 plus names on a PDF that all needed to be typed. Yeah. And then I did that, and then I made a page for each one of them. And initially, you know, okay, so he's a Swedish businessman. I was happy with that. And the WikiSpooks editors have gradually gone through and said, okay, we've got a guy here. He was a double Bilderberger. We don't know much about him. And they've dredged it up.
Into him, yeah.
So we've got a group here. I mean, have you heard of the phrase Bilderberg wind? So when we use that phrase, if you're a boat and the Bilderberg wind gets behind you, you're going to go places. So these are people who may be mucking along without very much in the way of high prestige
like
jobs.
David Lammy, for example.
They go to the Bilderberg and it all changes. They've impressed somebody who says, we can use this guy. Now,
maybe it's because they've got some dirt on him they can use to blackmail him.
Yes, sir. I mean, Margaret Thatcher impressed. In 1975, she went there. She was quiet for a couple of days and then gave a Thatcher special. I think it was Rockefeller, and this was in somebody's memoirs, said, yeah, we can use this lady. Well, let's put her on board. And hey, presto, leader of the Conservative Party. Well, that's a long story.
So they then got rid of her eventually.
Yeah, they agreed to disagree. They had a falling out. And
it was over the EU, I think.
Tony, it's it's very hard to say exactly what's going on at those meetings, because I wasn't at those meetings. And you might have been hanging around outside. What we can clearly say is, I think I remember pointing out to you about British prime ministers, because who became a prime minister is on the record and who attended these meetings. Once I'd done all the data of putting everybody in is on the record. So we could say, for example, NATO Secretary General, nobody has ever been a permanent Secretary General since 1966 unless they've been to a Bilderberg meeting first.
Right.
That's fascinating.
Can you say something about the functionality on WikiSpooks? What can you do with these names?
About 1966.
Sorry,
1966, the first item on the agenda is restructuring NATO. So that might just be coincidence, and there's a lot of things about that whole group which might just be coincidence, but there is another way of looking at it, which is that they're up to dodgy business that they don't want to tell us about.
Yeah, so what about functionality? Can you make sort of network links between various people who've been to different meetings, etc.?
Probably the most advanced thing that your listeners are going to be able to do is to do a semantic query, as in a query about meaning. So if you learn how to do it, you could ask the website, who attended the 1966 meeting, who also attended the 68 meeting, or who attended the 1970 meeting, who was British, who was in the government of so-and-so, who also attended the Bilderberg. So you can actually do fairly complex queries if you learn how to do it, and that's how I've spotted who was written in Epstein's black book, who also flew on the Lita Express. You know, it's interesting. It's just a random crossover.
Maybe you can get your sort of 5-star or even 10-star Bilderbergers who've done all these things. But, I mean, this week we've got Jens Stoltenberg. I mean, it just seemed to be like Bilderberg basically seems to be like the political lobby for NATO. So it's the military-industrial complex's way of making sure their people get into key political positions. But Stoltenberg was the head of NATO's Secretary General for about a decade or so, a long, long time anyway, several terms, because no one else, it seemed, wanted to do it, or maybe he was just very keen on doing it himself. But anyway, he's just been replaced by Mark Rutte, from Holland. He's Danish. And like literally this week, it's been announced that Stoltenberg is now going to become co-chair at Bilderberg. So this does seem to sort of weld together these two things. I wonder if you could just say something about this relationship between Bilderberg and NATO. It's obviously very close. What is it?
Well, Bilderberg was set up in Europe, but they quickly held meetings in the US. Who are the power players in Bilderberg, and what was their ambition in that meeting? We can only speculate, but looking at the job titles of the Bilderbergers, things like, okay, the EU is fairly much known to have been cooked up at Bilderberg based on people who put things in their memoirs or accidentally leaked things. So, yeah, who...
And the EEC and everything that preceded it, yeah.
Yeah, EEC, And then who are the job holders of the key positions in these institutions? That's a matter of public record. Yeah. And a large number of those people were Bilderbergers. So you've got a process. They're staffing the process. So it's going to roll the way that they want it to roll. Now, where does the impetus for this whole thing come from? I'm not sure about who kicked off. There are names that come up, isn't there? There's that Polish chap. But
Joseph Rettinger.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you speculated that Bilderberg might have been a project of the US to try to tighten their control over the European half of the continent and make sure that nobody made any friendly overtures to Russia, then what would you, if that were the hypothesis, what would you expect to see?
Okay, so wasn't the epithet, it was something like... keep the Germans down, the Americans in, and the Russians out of Europe.
Yeah, that's a good summary.
So, okay, so your page, one of your pages on WikiSpooks, which there's a couple that have really, really impressed me over the years. I'll name two, and you can maybe say, pick one of them and explain why you think it was necessary or a good idea to do it. One is the article which I regularly quote, which is 9/11 Israel did it, all the proof in the world, which got Stephen Sizer sacked. Well, not quite sacked, but he was not allowed to talk about the Middle East as a vicar in southwest London. And the other one is during COVID, you started to realise a lot of Bilderbergers were involved in COVID. So do you want to just talk about one or either of those?
Yeah, I'll talk
or maybe
about,
both.
Well, I'll talk about the COVID list first because I'm in Bangladesh, so I'm kind of out of the normal orbit, but I've still got access to the internet. And oh dear, somebody's declared people will be locked down. Well, these people didn't commit crimes. Ah, I think I recognise that name. Why do I recognise that name? Answer, because since 2017, I busy typed in all the Bilderbergers that we didn't have. So if we got a list of all the Bilderbergers ever, and then somebody comes up, it's very easy to tell, is this guy a Bilderberger? So what I was doing during COVID, they're busy announcing all the COVID garbage that we remember. So, there's a name attached there. So-and-so is in charge of $400 million... or $400 billion worth of anti-COVID funds. She's a Bilderberger. Does that actually make any difference? So I started off, the first person was Matthew Pottinger, who floated the idea in the UK in 2020, before the vaccines, so-called, had become available. What about if we maybe said, once you've been somehow protected, then you can... So he floated the idea of vaccine passports in the UK Parliament. Now, it was shot down and nobody had any... Because that's not the British way to do things. Well, it wasn't in late 2020. They'd certainly changed their mind on that a few times. But it just struck me, oh, that's interesting, because he went to the 2019 Bilderberg. I made a mental note, and then the next time a Bilderberger came up, so, oh, yeah, I'll put them on the list then. So then I hear somebody's picked a COVID task force. Okay, we've got 12 people on the list here. Any of these ring a bell? I don't know. I'll put them in WikiSpooks. 12 names. 3 of them come up in blue. Why do we already have pages for these people? It doesn't mean they're necessarily all Bilderbergers, but we have all the Bilderbergers. So if they are a Bilderberger, they're going to be there on the list. Yeah. So I started out with this list, and I started out with people from the 2019 Bilderberg, people from the 2018. Not a good way to do it, because some of these people have been to all of these meetings. Anyway, better way to do it, organise it by what they're up to. So we have Bilderbergers involved in researching CRISPR technology, the Wuhan Institute of Virology. They're interested in pandemic planning, so-called. So,
if anyone doesn't know, the CRISPR is gene splicing. This is going into DNA, chip, chop, 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 splicing it together.
Yeah, so quite a... I mean, we've had people who came... I mean, there's people that...
At least that's what it's supposed to do. I mean, it could be it's just a, you know, some sort of ruse to get...
Well, it might be a bluff, Tony. It might be that they can't actually do this thing, but anybody who's at that level knows you have to pretend that they can do it. But We got people who are interested in graphene. There's people from like nanomaterials who headed the nanomaterials department of a university.
Right.
Only ever go to one Bilderberg because they're not deep state operatives. They're just there they're because necessary. They've got some very important information and it's time for them to tell it to whoever's been funding them for a few years. So I don't know what they're all doing, but we categorized. And you remember, I remember when pointing out to you, Tony, we're going to get to 100 people. Yeah, it started off just one of
How many did it end up as?
It's about 200 now. Okay. Somebody came across, I can't remember I can't exactly remember the name, but I think it's like a global something for post-pandemic policy. And more, I'm paraphrasing, not quoting, this is an informal body that influences governments on rational pandemic policy. So it's a tool full of deep state functionaries, but there was like 40 people in it, and 14 of them were Bilderbergers.
Right.
So it's quite extraordinary if you think it in terms of statistics. Obviously, they were involved. Now that's not to say that they planned the whole thing, but if somebody else planned the whole thing, they probably knew how to push the Bilderbergers buttons.
Well, I remember chatting with one of our regular contributors, Kevin Cahill, ex Sunday Times, who wrote Who Owns Britain.
Yeah.
And he talked about the idea of... he was worried that the modern... Because he's an ex-soldier in the Irish Army and the British Army. And he's worried that there seems to be an attempt to recruit psychopaths into the army. Now, it's almost as if psychopathy has become a very, very valuable commodity in the modern world. Obviously, people who are going to, deliberately try and cause... You know, this with the whole vaccine passport thing, a kind of slave state, effectively. If you haven't done this, then you can't do. You know, this is like the social credit, Chinese social credit kind of system. Anyway, psychopaths. We seem to have quite a few of them.
Yeah, I'm using the word psychopath to mean somebody who was from birth unable to, didn't have a conscience. Didn't consider other people. I draw a distinction with sociopaths, which are people who've just learned to behave that way based on what life has taught them. So you could be perfectly organically quite healthy and just be very cruelly brought up. You will not be a healthy person. Anyway, psychopath or sociopath, it's a very important difference, is you can't actually reform psychopaths. However hard you try, if you're born deaf, you're unlikely to develop hearing suddenly, and that's how it is. It's a part of their brain that doesn't work.
I mean, isn't the idea of childhood trauma also play a role in this sometimes?
Certainly. Sociopathy can be deliberately created. You can abuse somebody, you can put them in a relationship in a childhood where they're going to identify more strong, where you can control them, basically, and that has been done, I believe, over generations. But it's a known fact that psychopaths tend to preponder at the top of these hierarchies. We've set up a system which selects for psychopathy. Now, The Corporation was the first movie that I know that actually really put this into question, said, what on earth are we doing here? Why are we doing this? And that was pretty soundly ignored, as far as I can see, by anybody who's... even a test... If I'm going to have a bus driver, let's have somebody who can distinguish black from white. Let's give this guy a driving test. What about if we gave, is this person a psychopath or not, to the people who are going to be making the decisions about millions of other lives? Does it actually matter whether they have a conscience? Because you and I, anybody with a conscience, is likely to say, yeah, I think that's quite an important point. But this is not something that ever gets tested for. In fact, we're selecting for the opposite. Somebody who's a very convincing liar is somebody who's likely to be moving up the
group. I look at professional liars as politicians. I mean, we've talked quite a bit about Bilderberg. What about Starmer and the Trilateral Commission?
I haven't been following Starmer. I'm very pleased to say I have him put down as a deep state functionary, as a puppet leader. He was, Crown Prosecution. And didn't bother with Jimmy Savile because, you know, that's Jimmy Savile.
He did bother with Julian Assange. In fact, he made loads of trips to the States and then burnt all the documents that proved he had done.
Well, you've convinced me. He's a puppet of the deep state, and I just didn't look any further than that. I'm afraid I haven't got a great hope for people who get elected. There's a couple of air quotes there if you didn't hear them in my voice. Because this is not a system for you and I and ordinary people to decide who gets to rule us. This is a system for the powers that be who already rule us to try to placate people to lie to them that they're actually being ruled in their best interests.
Well, it's quite dark, it's quite depressing. I mean, we've been there before, particularly looking at Gaza with this gigantic concentration camp, which our government unbelievably is supporting, even on Remembrance Sunday.
It's not my government, Tony.
Well, it is. Oh, your Bangladeshi government, is it?
No, they may wave a flag that seems familiar to you. If that's your government, if there's your government there, they're governing you.
That's true.
No, let's move on to things. So, I mean, running WikiSpooks as one does, there's a lot of negative or a lot of shocking things. There's a lot of quite horrifying and murderous things, really, really sickening things.
Let's just call a spade, evil. It's about actually finding evil people to put into power, and if they are not actually evil themselves, they're people who will read a script up until the point at which they go off the script, at which case they'll be jettisoned, sent down the oubliette, you know, this kind of giant tunnel onto the rocks below.
Yeah, there is a memory hole, and people who transgress do get flushed down it, and there's a lot of people wondering what happened and realising only later that they shouldn't have said what they said.
Princess Diana, maybe?
Princess Diana appears to me to have been murdered by the deep state because she went off-piste. Yeah. We've got, two letters in her handwriting that she thinks her husband is going to murder her, staging a fake car crash. Now, if that's not evidence that we might want to have the man up to hear what he has to say, I don't know what is evidence.
Well, no. So anyway, anything positive? This is dark, it's quite depressing, the idea that history is repeating itself. In an age of television and nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't agree that history is repeating itself. Certain patterns are repeating itself. We are, I think, working out to some kind of really exciting point to be positive about this. We've got a planet full of people here, and in the last 5 years, some atrocious lies were told about a killer virus, and people were encouraged to get injected with all sorts of things. Now, I hope that isn't going to cause disaster in the long term. In the near term, quite a lot of people have died, more than we would have expected. Now, we were expecting a peak in death. Just to point out, very simple point, there is a thing called the baby boomers. Huge increase in births. So if you add the human life expectancy to that, you could get goodbye baby boomers, you're going to have a huge increase in deaths. So that is quite a relevant thing in terms of pandemics. If you're going to look and panic about the death rate, let's have a plan that's like, well, let's look at the birth rate one human life ago. I haven't heard a lot of people doing this. I've heard the WHO announce that the 2020s was going to be a decade of pandemics. Well, it was quite obviously going to be a decade of increased death based on the decade of increased birth after World War II.
So if you're into stats, what do you make of the Swedish model?
You mean about the not locking down? Well, I got this great graph, which is number of supposed COVID deaths in London, and then simultaneously the number of COVID deaths in Stockholm. So the headline is, look how effective the London lockdown was. It also brought the deaths down in Sweden, because the two graphs are almost indistinguishable. Okay, one place they locked down, one place they didn't. Not very strong evidence that we need any lockdowns. And just this is spontaneous from me, because just in case you didn't hear, did you hear the name of Pierre Nkurunziza? Did you hear the name of George Makafuli? Is it George Makafuli? Somebody Makafuli. George Makafuli, these are two friends. One was president of Tanzania and one was prime minister of Burundi. I may have got those the wrong way around, but they were friends. And George Makafuli, Dr. Makafuli, had a PhD in chemistry. So he was, as African leaders go, probably quite up on this, and said to himself, okay, I don't really believe this whole COVID narrative. What could I do as the head of the country that would actually sink their boats. And he sent back some samples, get this thing tested, to the WHO emergency testing lab. And some of them came back positive. And at that point, he revealed, well, that's fascinating, because they weren't actually human. One of these was from the inside of a papaya. So if you can tell me how that had COVID, it'd be very interesting. And one of them, I think, was engine oil. So that was George McAfee, and he told the WHO and their entourage to get packing and said he wasn't going to bother with any COVID statistics. So he sadly died in 2021, reportedly of COVID. Now, his friend, the head of Burundi, who had a similar idea, Pierre Nkurunziza, I may have slaughtered that name, sorry, the late Pierre Nkurunziza, again, did the same thing, and then he died about a month or two later, possibly of COVID, but there's plenty of questions surrounding those circumstances. So that's two national leaders who said, this COVID is not going to happen in my country, who were then both dispatched. Now, then we had the Javier Muezi, I think. Again, I might not have quite done justice to the name. He was running Haiti and said, we aren't going to do any jabs here. We don't do COVID jabs. Not needed, mate. We're doing all right. Now, he was hit by bullets. I think that was more or less tied to an American. I mean, exactly quite what that tells us. The fact that people who pulled the trigger were Americans.
They jumped out of the Taiwanese embassy, didn't they? Which is a rare thing on planet Earth.
It's hard to know, isn't it, Tony? But it's like, you've got a guy who says, we don't do COVID jabs here, and then he gets shot. Mm. What's his successor going to say? Decided perhaps on a more standard policy. Mm. I'll bring you up to date. We have Robert Fico, who said, I think he was president or either president or prime minister of not Czechoslovakia, the Czech Republic, whatever it's called now. And he said, we're going to have a proper inquiry into COVID. We're going to look and really see what's actually happened here. He survived, I think, the first and the second assassination attempt, and I believe he's still with us. God bless you, Robert Fico, for being that independent-minded. So this has got to send a message. How many national leaders could the deep state feasibly kill? Killing people is what they do. How many do they have to kill in Europe before the other European leaders realise, I think we're going to tone down the COVID criticism, perhaps we don't need the independent inquiry. So this is important evidence that most people are just not aware of. There's nobody talking about this in the corporate media because it's so revealing. It's quite difficult to keep it off the internet, but this is 2024, an ongoing project to try to remove anything that conflicts with the narrative. And that has been ramped up since COVID. I think it's largely because COVID failed and didn't achieve what they wanted.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I noticed for the first time during the Trump election period, just the week or so before the election itself, he did a rally in Madison Square Garden in his hometown, where Robert F. Kennedy Jr. spoke and Tulsi Gabbard spoke there. And there were quite a lot of disparaging, you know, CNN-type reviews of this, or, you know, people left early, there was pictures of people leaving, this kind of thing. But there was I think it was Associated Press did a very, I would say, fair, you know, this is Trump in his hometown, lots of people enjoyed themselves, they came out laughing, you know, they obviously had a good time, like going to a rock concert, that sort of thing. And because this was like just literally a week before the election, within two or three days the story had vanished. Like, if you clicked on the link, that story was not there. The headline that you're on the search engine, you went and it's gone. It's completely gone. Yeah. And it took me about 20 minutes to find a version of it somewhere. I think it was on Yahoo or somewhere like that, where the original story was still there. So this is happening in real time when it comes to an election. The people like Eric Schmidt, Peter Thiel, the Bilderbergers, basically, seem to now have the whip hand when it comes to what you find out about. And when you're looking for something, they're going to tell you, you're going to find this nowadays. The search engines are almost useless.
Well, I take that up to a point, Tony. They're certainly very influential.
At the point that you need it. It's a bit like the mainstream press now. At the point where you really need the right information, they're going to feed you the wrong information.
People have spent years and decades investing to try to get themselves to be trusted sources whom you can rely on if you need them. Because why wouldn't they?
Like who?
The corporate media.
Yeah, but the BBC, for example, they've now come up with this thing called BBC Verify. Really,
they... Mariana Spring. Well, that's great. Well, what I'd like them to verify is this. Did they actually announce that the Salomon Brothers building, also known as Building 7, that had collapsed or was going to collapse 20 minutes before it actually did collapse? Because
so
if you see that video, it's perfectly rigid and undamaged, tiny little fires in the bottom, and then a 47-storey extra-reinforced building, because it was the largest CIA building outside of Langley's. This is not an ordinary building. This is an extremely strong building, suddenly collapses. Now, how you get wind that it might be going to collapse before it does, quite... I mean, if BBC can verify that, I'd love to hear it. They did claim at one point that they couldn't answer any more questions because we've lost the tapes.
Yeah, well, we've got the tapes. Yeah,
well, they later found the tapes on a different shelf, apparently, if you believe these stories.
Anyway, look, I mean, this is it's dispiriting hearing about the lies. It's dispiriting hearing about the genocide. It's dispiriting hearing about World War III, nuclear war. It's dispiriting hearing about economic collapse, food shortages.
It is. This is the job of corporate media.
But it's happening. It's really happening.
Manhunt's wife doesn't get a story. Manhunt's wife, let's tell everybody about it.
How about a new initiative to make sure we get loads more fresh organic food? That's not happening either. There's a real changes in the big outside world. So I'm asking you a sort of final, to wrap up, a sort of spiritual question about this is a dimension we never see included, which is the spiritual side.
Well, I was thinking today about what actually makes people happy. I'm living in Bangladesh most of the time, so I come here in the UK and I see a world of abundance. I see lovely, big, strong, clean buildings, and people who are not lovely, slightly overweight, generally stressed, and from a Bangladeshi perspective, these people are not hungry, these people are not about to be bombed. What are they all stressing about? They're stressing about poison in their mind, or, since you use the word, in their soul. It's a spiritual dimension. What is in these people's minds? What are they doing?
Isn't the stress over time and money?
Well, yes. You're asking me, I mean, I didn't actually make the choice to live in the UK. I'm living outside the UK. What are you stressed about, you UK dwellers? Isn't it all the stuff that corporate media wants to pump into people's heads? Yeah. It's what they watch night after night and what they hear at the workplace because people watched it on the telly the night before.
Or increasingly people don't. They've switched off from it because they don't believe it anymore. In fact, I think one of the latest surveys was 65-70% of people say they don't trust the mainstream press anymore in Britain.
Well, that's...
But anyway, on the spiritual side, tell me some reason to carry on.
What else are you going to do? Okay, the less flippant one would be that everybody has unique talents and gifts, and there's things that we can do which are immensely more rewarding than complaining or trying to break things up, trying to break things down. There's things like creation, things like putting seeds in the soil. Whatever bridge that is that you can see that needs building, if you think you can have a go at building it, try building it, see what happens.
And several conversations I've had recently here about the move away in Britain from it being a Christian country with those Christian values, Christian morality, the idea of love thy neighbour as thyself, put others before yourself, seems to be out the window. We've now got this thing which is labelled by Sandy Adams, Neil Oliver and people like that as the zero trust agenda. Something's changed, doesn't it?
It certainly has, Tony. People are encouraged to trust the machine, the technosphere. GPS will always keep working because we decree it. Have you heard of the Carrington event? This, I think, is an important piece of history which shows the lie to the story that they're trying to help us all, they're making us aware of climate change and things like that, all these dangers that are going to come down the pipe that we don't know, we've got to trust these guys. So the Carrington event was in the 19th century a solar storm. So 19th century, we don't have a lot of technology here. We certainly don't have much electrical technology. We do have some. The Carrington event was basically a big solar storm, but it was so bright that you could read a newspaper by the light of it at the night in New York. And it set fire to some telegraphs, and that was about all it did, because we didn't have the tech. But it's a solar storm, so it's a massive coronal discharge of ions which are going to hit electrical apparatus. Now, who knows what that's going to do to your 10 nanometer smartphone? I certainly don't know. But I mean, if it's in a big metal box, I'm sure the military have done some planning. But all this, oh yeah, we're going to switch everything to digital. It's going to be really efficient. It's going to be really smart. It's going to be so much better. It's also going to be tremendously fragile. Because if GPS stops working, if any of these pieces of the little system stop working, well, then you've lost what, in some cases, might be an essential function. So the idea that, no, we don't really know much about, as far as to finish off about the Carrington event, it was, 18-something. And as far as we know, it was the biggest single solar storm that we've seen for thousands of years. So why did it just happen then? We know so little about this, and it has a potential to destroy. I mean, if somebody's like, oh, are you for or against Bitcoin? I'm thinking, well, it's digital. It's going to be on a computer that might just suddenly vanish like that.
Well, look, we've become so dependent on this stuff. Look, you know, I'm going to leave us with a sentiment which was shared with me by a guy called Glenn Jenkins, who was the one of the DJs and one of the leaders of the Exodus Collective in Luton back in the 1990s, who were a free party sound system with a massive community stack system. They used to run free parties, and his message at the end of the evening was always, disconnect from Babylon.
Yeah, I'd go with that. I just, about during the 2020s, so all this COVID stuff, I was planting a lot of fruit trees, and the fruit trees totally didn't care about COVID. Of course they didn't. This is the real world, in which what your own eyes and your own ears tell you is sovereign. What anybody else says might or might not be relevant, but it's probably not very relevant. I think if more people lived in the world of their own bodily organs, if more people decided, nah, I think I'm going to forget the social media, I'll actually pay somebody a visit in person. Well that, where's the power of Peter Thiel if people are seeing each other face to face?
Well, and you also reminded me of a series I watched as a youngster on BBC Children's Television, which was called The Changes. It was filmed in Bristol by Anna Home produced it, which was all about a strange event that happened where technology was all evil, and for some reason, like one day, every piece of technology, people were afraid to touch it, they started destroying it. It was almost like something took them over. This was things like radios, people were smashing them up, cars, people were smashing them up in the street. It was quite sad to see people smashing up bicycles. I wasn't entirely sure that was fair. But that, in a way, says it all, is this rush to technology is the problem.
Well, the Luddites actually just wanted technology that worked for them. They weren't anti-technology as such. They're thinking, what are the consequences of this technology? Now, that label is used as an enemy image. If anybody dislikes any technology, we'll call them a Luddite, and we'll think badly of them for that. But is there? Do we think, well, these people are rich, they are entrepreneurial, therefore they should be allowed to work on whatever they want to work on?
Technology is not yours, it's done to you. Anyway, look, WikiSpooks, I don't know if you've got socials, but maybe you can just give us the WikiSpook website as well.
The WikiSpooks website is at www.wikispooks.com. We do have not terribly well organized, I think there's a Facebook page. The trouble is we're likely to get censorship, and we've had censorship. We had a group with 1,000 or so Telegram people, and that was just randomly cut off. And it is totally unaccountable. Any kind of policies that they're going to decree, oh, this is what... Yeah. It's subject to their interpretation. And what are you going to do? Are you going to bring a lawsuit against this large organisation? Well, good luck with that.
So what about Twitter X, whatever, Facebook, any other of the socials, normal socials?
I think there are. I'm not the guy to.
You have to just look at the look for WikiSpeaks. Anyway, look.
Yeah,
Robin Upton, thanks ever so much for joining us, and be good to see you again sometime soon.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. It's been a while.